Next Chapter Podcasts.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hear Shakespeare like you've never heard before.
But thanks to all at once.
Who by next moon?
Thee we invite to see.
Who will be crowned at Scone?
Play On Podcasts are epic audio adventures reimagining timeless tales with award-winning actors.
Double toil and trouble.
Listen today at playonpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Boil and bake.
Eye of newt and toe of frog. Full of bat and tongue of dog.
The 500. The 500. J.A.M. been walking us down through that 2012 edition, so it ain't nothing to you. Hundreds more to go and in need of a friend, the king of fleece for Angelo. Talking the 500 until the end. Talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. on the 500. Talking the 500 until the end.
Run. God, I know so many dudes that do this, but that's not what it's about. It's by Liz Phair from the 1993 record Exile in Guyville. It's also number 327 out of 500 on the 500 with Josh Adamiz. What's up, party people? What's up, you doogly spooglies? You guys fucking rule. I love you guys to death. You know, we keep on living, man. We keep on living. We keep on giving. Big shout out to everybody that came to see me in Arizona. Man, I had fun. I got some Gilbert. Gilbert Mejia. M-E-G-I-A. He listens to the show and he said to me, don't ever stop doing this. So I won't. You can find me at the Comedy Cellar most nights, The Stand. I'm here in New York. I'll be in L.A. March 21st. We're doing a Shimmy Shimmy Ya. And April 3rd, we're doing a big goddamn comedy jam at the Comedy Store for the 40th anniversary of the Comedy Store. Maybe it's the 50th. I'm not sure. But make sure you just go to joshadammeyers.com for tickets. At Josh Adam Myers on all social media. And subscribe to the YouTube. YouTube.com/Josh Adam Myers. And our Patreon, guys. I know you are out there, Fleece Army. I know you support the show, but help support this show. There are people that work their butts off. We need your money. Patreon.com/the500podcast. Liz Phair. Is she fair? I think so. Liz Phair was an artist that I wanted to write off. I wanted to write this album off. I didn't really think I was going to have a fucking great time listening to it or recording this. And then I dug in. And when I dug in, man, did it hit me. My guest today was somebody that I never would have expected them to be the person that I am doing this podcast with, the one and only Ari Shaffir. You know Ari from his multiple specials on Netflix, Double Negative, his Comedy Central special, Paid Regular. You know him as the host and creator of This Is Not Happening, from Skeptic Tank, from Rogan, from Comedy, from Kobe Bryant. Good dude. Good dude, solid dude, Maryland boy. Love him to death. This was a fun one, man. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500 and listen free on all platforms or anywhere you get your pods. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group run by Crazy Evan. And for all things 500, go to the website that I hate more than anything in this world, the 500podcast.com. Well, 327 out of 500 Exile in Guyville by Liz Phair. I'm an Ari Shaffir, Ari, bringing mayhem. He is Ari.
It's not bad, very monotone.
That's how this album is.
I know, it's crazy.
So, I guess the first question I want to ask you, which is probably not the best way to start this podcast, but is that Liz Phair's nipple on the album cover?
I don't think so. I think it was blown up. But let me
see. Take a look at that and tell me. Here, hold on. Yeah, because even Young and Sick for your fucking thing put a little.
I like, feel like I would have noticed it. Is that a nip? Yeah, it's a nip. For sure. I'm surprised I didn't.
How do you not notice this?
Yeah, it's got to be. I'm shocked I never noticed that.
How did you not notice? Well, first of all right, so this is what blew me away about having you as the guest on this.
I have the record at home. It was way bigger. I'll look at it when I get home.
You should have been blown. Yeah, that would be the, well,
yeah, see, watch this. I'm going to turn the sound down. It shifts. It's like a different picture. Watch. And then it gets bigger. See it?
I don't know. Well, first of all,
it takes out the nipple and then it puts it in on the redo.
Oh.
You see it? See the shift?
I do see the shift.
I can't see. Yeah. Interesting. I got to look in the record. I'll send you the record.
So what blows me away was when I was trying to figure out a record for you to come on, and we I think I sent you the list, and there were a few albums on there that you were like, I could do The Cure, I could do that. And then you said this one, and this is one of those records where I was like, because I had no idea how impactful this was until I started doing the research.
Yeah.
But you said this was one of your favorite records of all time.
It was one of my favorites. And I know when you're picking out everything, oh, look at that ball. that it's going to be like Cure, I'm sure, like that, man, maybe not. But let's say I liked, I don't know, Nirvana's Nevermind, which I do.
Sure.
You'll find other people that'll do that. So it's like, I could, but if you want to get Rob Riggle to do that, sure, go ahead and get him to do that. This one, it's like, I'm pretty sure it's a specific time and place. You had to be in college in the early to mid 90s to really love this album.
So is that when you
in white college too?
Liberal arts.
Yeah, liberal arts college. Yeah, you had to be listening to Suzanne Vega and shit like that to really love this.
Is that all shit that you were into? Lilith Fair?
I had a ton of music, of albums, CDs, because I worked at the North Hill Service Desk, University of Maryland, and it was our job to log in packages. So we realized that we could just order packages to rooms that don't exist because we were the ones logging them in and calling the students like, hey, you live it. So we would order rooms to like broom closets, BMG, Columbia House.
Yes.
Bathrooms had a room number. And so it didn't coincide with anybody. So we would get to the desk and all our friends would just be like, hey, who's Anne Arundel? Oh, you're from Maryland. Yeah,
yeah.
And we're like, that's me. Hey, who's Mrs. Fields? Like, oh, that's me. Thanks. Anytime we heard a one-hit wonder on the radio.
You ordered it.
It's ordered. And some of those would really surprise you. Like the Toadies and like.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Totally. Like that, where like, it's not just that one album. Matt the Hopple was like, this was way before. But like. I just got this album, Matt the Hopple album, where it's like all the young dudes.
Oh, yeah, great song.
Only one I know. But then you look at the back and you're like, it's produced by David Bowie. So you're like, oh, and the album's actually really good. It just didn't take off for whatever reason.
That was that was the first record from doing this podcast that I like fell in love with when I did
really?
It. I was, oh, my God. There's like six or I think Jeepers Creepers or Jeep. Fuck, I can't remember the titles.
Yeah, I never remember titles.
One of the Boys. Joke. Something Crocus. The fucking fans are going to get pissed at me. But great record.
Yeah.
But it's easier now to discover all of that.
Because you just play on Spotify.
Exactly. Now, you're talking about what year?
This was 90. Let's say I graduated in 92 high school, started college in 94. Went to a seminary in between there, yeshiva. So I didn't discover this when it came out. But when I got to Maryland, so I went to Yeshiva University for a year. Oh, that would have been 94, 95. So 95. I went there for a year, lost my religion, then transferred to Maryland.
Losing my religion.
When was that? I remember that.
That's
I think
Ari
I still have my religion when that happened.
He wants to fuck a goyim.
Yeah. It's not a goyim. Eam is the plural, but
goyim.
The goyim. Yeah, so I got into it later, but there was this dearth of like backlog of college rock that was just available. Tori Amos, I remember hearing that in Israel in seminary. This one I definitely did not. But there was a Suzanne Vega. Eventually, Dave Matthews, but that was later. But there was this like backlog of stuff. G Love, where you got there, and people are like, we've been listening to this for 10 years.
Yeah,
you know, this is college rock.
So were you
and
just
so this was that? Too.
So were you just sheltered growing up? Like,
yeah,
was
I listened
there...
to Top 40. It wasn't sheltered like Hasidic.
Okay,
but I listened to Top 40. I listened to Casey Kasem's Countdown on Sundays. And I just liked Top 40 until you get an occasional like older sister who's like, whoa, you like, what's this, Erasure? What is this? And it's like, it's a cool band. And you're like, okay, there's some cool shit out there.
Yeah.
But not till I got to college, really, and started listening to HFS.
Yes.
I was delivering flowers and pizza.
Yes.
I really listened to HFS hard. And then I got into Green Day from Basket Case and that Smashing Pumpkins album, 1979, whichever one, 1979.
Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
No, wait, way before that.
That, no, that's got 1979 on
way before
it. So
that.
Gish.
Gish, yeah.
Gish is the one that made them like cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Siamese
you would
Dream.
Hear that on the radio. I'm like, is this a girl? Or who's singing this? Because, you know, it was like, today is my friend. It's just like, and then you're like, oh, this is alt rock and I loved it. And then when I got to college, everyone already, those people were cooler than I was. So they knew stuff.
Also, we were very lucky, I think, to grow up in the Maryland area because we had three stations.
Uh-huh.
We had
Q107.
Well, I was even going to say that. I was going to say just rock music. I was going to say DC 101.
Sure.
We had Reese HFS. Man.
That was the best.
And then we had 98 Rock from Baltimore,
which
was a little bit more of like the, you know, new medley Theory of a Dead Man. At least that's what it evolved
into. Yeah,
it
was harder for sure. So was DC 101 was like rock, but also like classic rock. It was like split.
Yeah.
HFS was the only pure.
Pure alt.
Yeah.
Which then, do you remember when it became La Risa?
So annoying. Because it was one of the coolest stations as I've gotten older and started traveling more. I think it was one of the coolest stations in the country ever.
There's one in Seattle.
Sure.
I don't know what it is, but I can't. But they have sure. videos of live performances by these artists.
Yeah.
Constantly.
They had a festival, WHF Festival.
Yeah.
It was just like anyone who was in WHF Festival was about to be launched in this next year.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember No Doubt. I was like, who's No Doubt? And it was like by the end of that next year, it was like they were massive stars.
I always remember when they started playing Good Charlotte only because I met a girl that I started like dating. I met her at a rave and she had just dated the lead singer. She was like, this band, Good Charlotte. Yeah, he's in that. They're going to blow up. And I was like, nah, whatever. And then like literally like 2 months later, they were one of the biggest bands.
So I got into Liz Phair from her second album.
Which is, let me just double check the math. We don't have the guy looking it up
Supernova.
Today, everybody. So, okay, yeah. So that was the one.
That's the first one I remember. And so that's when it was like Liz Phair. I'm like, well, how many are in the top 500? Because you know how you have like an emotional attachment to some songs?
Yeah.
And some albums. And you're like, well, which one is the, and they're like, this one's 56. And the one I heard is not in the top 500.
Dude,
I'm like, oh, really? I don't know. I thought the second one was better.
Not to get us off topic real quick, but this record, and this is what blew
Which
me.
One? Which one?
This one, Exile okay. on Exile. I can't keep talking. In Guyville. This, when I saw it on the list, I was like, why is this on the 500 greatest albums list? Because I only knew her from some, I think one of the hits from Supernova. Yeah.
Supernova.
Yes, that was the one that I knew.
So that's when she's shredding a guitar. I think she had this thing where this one, Exile on Guyville, was so dead, like monotone voice, very simple guitar, some piano, and even the piano, you can almost play with one finger. You can hear it. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. It's like, it's intentionally uncomplicated. I think she was responding to some criticism with her second album because she shreds.
Saying the next one is.
Well, I think she heard, wow, this is amazing, but also she heard some people go, can you even play? Can you even, she came up as a Chicago music scene. So I think she was going like, yeah, I can fucking play well. I'm choosing not to. It's like a guy who paints a white box on a canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, do you even know how to paint? And they're like, yeah, here's a photorealistic painting of fucking, you know, downtown Paris.
Yeah.
I choose not to. So I think that's what she's doing.
But I think you're right about the reaction to this record to going on to doing the more electronic stuff,
uh-huh.
I'm trying to find where I found it. Like a lot of her fans like turned on her from that.
For that. Oh, really?
For going into more electric. Because what I was trying to say was this record, not only is it on the 500 greatest albums list in 2012,
are you following the old one or the new one?
I'm following 2012.
Because you already started.
I'm already started dude. Yeah. And then 2020.
Where did this move? Where did this move from where to where? Do you know?
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
This is going to blow. This blew me away. Let me find it. This went from
before you even say it should have been called the overcorrection list because they just went full on like black women, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And it's like black, I can almost understand because they definitely focus more on rock on the first one, which is fair. It's Rolling Stone. Rock and roll.
It was all white guys. It was all old white
guys.
So
like, hey,
this.
Have we forgotten guys like Marvin Gaye? Like, that is technically rock. Yes, sure. I mean, we've got Beethoven too, but like, we're talking about modern music.
Yeah.
But with girls, it was like, they were always available. Sarah McLachlan was a household name. Tori Amos was a household name. So those
I don't know
be-
if they're on there. I do know that Fiona Apple has like every one of her records on there, which I love Fiona. So I'm like, yeah, okay,
one, two.
There you go.
But it's like they did not discover women. So for women to change places, like, what are you doing? Are you just running scared?
The list really became, you know, the hip hop of today and like who influenced that. So, but like the fact that they removed so many great records that I've already gone through and
removed
not saying
completely.
Completely off, and then they put like all six of Drake albums on there.
Yeah,
some of those I don't agree with. Sure. Some of those I don't agree with.
It's
but
just pop, his shit is he kills. He has so many hits, but like, I mean, how many fucking what's it called? I'm bringing sexy back albums. Are there
on the list?
Well, yeah, what's his name?
Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, you know what I mean. He's a pop machine.
I don't
too.
Know if he's got any on the new list. Probably
right, so he's a hit machine.
Probably the first
so if you're
one.
You're gonna put Drake on because it's a hit machine. Put on Justin Timberlake, put on fuck, you know, shit like that.
I think they put the Drake on, and as we were talking about this, it made me start thinking, it's not so much that it's pop, it's this, that, you keep in mind, Drake came out 12 years ago. 12, 13 years ago is when he first dropped.
Oh, wow.
And because of where he did in 2012 or 2011, 2010.
It wasn't on at all, okay.
There was nobody doing what he was doing, and now he's influenced all the guys that are making records now.
Influence is like a bigger thing. Sometimes you hear an album and you're like, why is it so pop? But it's like, it was the first of its kind. You know, Hannah Gadsby's special. It's going to, you can like it or not like it, but like,
there was nothing.
It's
like going
to go down in history. It's like, wait, what is this? It's very serious, intentionally. So people later will be like, hey, maybe some of these albums didn't nail it, but it broke ground, you know? So I think this was that. I don't know.
It must have been because, and this is, do you want to guess? Do you want to guess this guess? So
what,
this
was
is
old place?
So this is, what number are we on right now? Hold on. This is number, fuck, God damn it.
I know the new number because I looked it up just to see what year it came out. So I saw the new number, but
I didn't
compare it to the old number.
One is 327.
Wow, that's a big jump.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is number 56. That means it's in the top 100 records of all time.
That's nuts. So what's behind it?
On the new list?
Yeah, what are the next five?
Hold on, let me find out. Give me a second.
That's nuts.
Give me a second.
That's really nuts. I know I saw one thing like, how could this be 56? And some like Bruce Springsteen album that I hadn't heard of is like way further down. But I'm like, because it's not his main album.
Well, Bruce, look.
Bruce is
really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Yeah, he's just like, he's just lame. He's just fucking dude rock. It's just like he has
a
couple of songs.
He's a working class hero, dude.
I guess. I was not a working class guy. It's like, I live in New Jersey, although technically I don't.
He was. He was when he started. All right, here we go. So I pulled it up. It was number 56.
Yeah.
So right before it.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's right before
it? Okay, right before it, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
Okay, so now what you're saying is, now this is, obviously, we have a specific taste in music. You and I probably overlap a bit.
I think so.
You go more rock, I go more...
I'm shocked that you are like a Tori Amos fan, a Liz Phair fan, like the Lilith Fitzgerald.
I like HFS. That was my thing. You probably need a little more DC one.
But Liz, which is true.
Yeah.
But Liz Phair and Sarah McLachlan are not HFS.
Yes, they are.
No, they are not.
Yeah, for sure.
You think so?
Yeah, 1,000%. That's where I'd find them.
I swear to you, like on every...
Sarah McLachlan was not hard enough for DC 101.
Liz Phair, I could see, Liz Phair, like Sarah McLachlan, 100% not on DC 101 or 98 Rock. That's adult contemporary to a point.
Yeah.
I'm talking about HFS of all, I could see Liz Phair being on there. Tori Amos, no. Ani DiFranco, no.
Ani DiFranco was too out there. So, but anyway, what I'm saying is Dark Side of the Moon is, I know I have a bias of what I was raised with, I can see people putting it in their top 10 of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Dark Side is Pink Floyd's number one album. Wait, what's the other one, actually?
Oh, The Wall. The Wall, the Swish You Were Here.
Yeah, Dark Side is a better album. It's
way more accessible.
I heard an interview with him once, this is not to go off topic, and it was the 25th or 30th or 50th or 80th anniversary of Dark Side of the Moon, whatever it was, some year. And the interviewer was like, did you know when you were making it, what it was going to do, like what kind of response it would get. And he goes, yeah, it was genius. And I knew it was genius while I was writing it. It's one of the greatest albums of all time. What are you talking about? Of course people are going to like it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the duchy, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Now, they asked Liz Phair, did you know the reception of Exile on Guyville? And she goes, no. She goes, literally, this is her quote, was like, I finished lots of projects before in my life. This was another project that I was working on, and I had finished it. I was happy to finish it. I had no idea it was going to be as big as it was.
I don't think anybody
for
would.
For those to be neck and neck, it's a wild list.
It's wild.
But they're distracting us with the numbers. It's like, you just love this thing or not. It doesn't really matter.
The list means nothing. Yeah. I think.
They can rank it at 2,000. They can rank it at 2. It is what it is.
And it's at least,
doesn't matter what they rank it.
I think they're saying it's on the list. The fact that it's on the list, it deserves to be there. Which order it's in.
300-something's about right. That's what I think. 300-something's about right.
I'm fucking shocked this jumped up to number 56.
That's great. Because she's not even a black.
She's definitely not a black. She's white.
Yeah.
After that, on the new list, is The Band.
Okay.
Band
on the Run.
Then this is behind Liz Phair.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin #4. That's got Stairway to Heaven on it. Rock and Roll.
That's tough. Yeah.
Stevie Wonder, Talking Book. I don't know.
I said that one.
You are the sunshine of my life. Superstition.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then #60, One Week by Bare Naked Ladies.
Okay, so now the list makes a little more sense. That's also very high, but like it is better than One Week by Bare Naked Ladies, but okay.
No, followed by Astral Weeks by Van Morrison, and then you could go on and on.
So, some of these things I don't really know, so I'm not mad at a Van Morrison thing. I've never been in a Van Morrison, so it's like whatever he is in the music world is fine. It's not my thing.
Why do you think this record
is
this high? Not even. Why?
I think they put on her and they do this to Michelle Wolf too. They put on her that she is a feminist icon when in reality, because this album, you have to say this, was written as a track by track response to Exile on Main Street, which I also have. I've been listening to both. There's a mix on Spotify, your former employer,
Dark Lord Spotify,
where it goes the first track of Exile on Main Street, then the first track of this, then the second track of Exile on Main Street, then the second track of
Guyville,
back and forth, so you see the response. And in a few of them, I can tell. So like I heard Ozzy Osbourne once go, one of my biggest influences was the Beatles. And you're like, how's that possible? And it's like, there's something musically that he's tuning into.
Sure.
Right? That I'm not that in, you know? Sometimes I can hear myself doing something like, oh, that's like a Kurt Metzger kind of thing. It's like, what are you talking about? There's something I'm clicking into. So occasionally on these, I could like, oh, there's a big organ that's repeated in the Exile on Main Street that's in this, you know, or just some sort of sound. But generally, it's lyrical, is her response. So like, I remember there's one track on Main Street, the Rolling Stones one, where it goes, it's all about coming into a town and just fucking shit up, fucking everybody's girlfriends and then leaving. And then her response was like, well, how is it in the Chicago music scene where you don't get to leave, you don't get to fuck shit up? And you just have to deal with the shit you've left behind.
Is that fucking Run?
I don't know,
because that says Happy. Because I've got the responses with every song.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can listen to her stuff afterwards, but that's her, that's what she did. That's not what I took out of it, you know?
So, yeah, so just for everybody, this is what I found. I found a really great article.
There's
about
some Rolling Stones articles, actually. Yeah.
There's one, I'm just going to give them the quote, College Media Network. I guess this is on the 25th anniversary of it.
With Exxon Guyville.
So, here we go. Guyville was touted during the original release and today as a song-by-song response to the Rolling Stones' number 72 double album masterpiece, Exile on Main Street. Though there is some debate on whether Guyville was actually arranged in this way, or this was merely a conceptual device created for marketing purposes, the album triumphs more than enough to stand as a cohesive, groundbreaking statement, sans the hazy conjecture.
Yeah, so that thing, I don't know if it was marketing or not, because it took me a long time to listen to both of them. I mean, decades.
What do you mean? To get through?
To get the back and forth. And until Spotify came out where you could just get Exile on Main Street, I didn't find it. I found it as a record 6-8 months ago.
Yeah.
So I listened to it that way. It's interesting. The album covers are a montage of freaks on Exile on Main Street and then one giant picture of a non-freak, a very cute Liz Phair. It's like, it's almost a response. But like that shit doesn't matter to me. It might have just been in her head. Like, I'm kind of thinking about this a little bit. You know, it might not have been an exact response, but whatever got her to do it, the songs are great.
So where did I find, because I watched an interview with her.
Fucking Run was a great song.
Fucking Run's a great, dude, there's, this is what's funny.
And it's all lyrical.
Dude, this is, when I put this on the first time.
Yeah.
I was like, two things popped in my head. I was like, Ari's really into this? I was like, I never would have assumed.
Yeah.
Because I always, like, when all the music I've seen you really party to is either when we're doing the jam, you're rocking to the metal stuff and the rock stuff, or when we went to Bonnaroo and yeah. you fucking seen Elvis. And
that's,
I love
that's live music. Live
for
music,
sure.
You need to be upbeat, right?
For
and
sure.
So if you get to a band like this, let's just say you went to see Liz Phair in this day, you're in your seat for most of it. It's not what I prefer.
Can't take Molly to that.
Exactly.
No.
You know?
You can take Molly to Liz Phair.
Yeah, sure. But you're sitting there. You just can't move.
So funny.
So it's just like, yeah, what I'm into for a band. That's why I'm like, if I get to see Band of Horses, I'm like, you better play at 3 p.m. You better not play at 9 p.m., motherfuckers. You better sit there and play while I can lay on a fucking blanket on the grass.
Be stoned. Yeah. Chill. Yeah, dude. Yeah. Band of Horses is definitely
Band
blanket.
Band of Horses, Carolina Story. There's like a just like, be mellow if you're going to be daytime. So Liz Phair would be a great daytime band.
What do you listen to now, just so I can get like a perspective? Like, what are the bands that you're really into right now?
I would say Arcade Fire, but
love
like,
Arcade
but
Fire.
Like LCD, I just went to see. There's newer bands. I don't know. Courtney Barnett, like
Courtney.
It's still HFS type music. It's still, but then we don't agree with what that is. So.
No. I'm not saying you're not. I'm not saying you're wrong. I just don't remember
right.
Sarah McLachlan and Tori Amos. I remember.
Tori might not have been.
An artist that I never got into.
Sarah McLachlan. I got into it because also some of this shit is just like if somebody cool and older had the album, you thought it was cool. This is why the Latino thing. I believe that's why Latinos in Southern California love Morrissey. I think one cool. Latino kid, you know, in like 93. Was like, oh, I fucking love this essay. And then was like, oh, fucking.
Oh, shit, man.
Juan loves it. Yeah, and then it just caught on from there. I that's what I think, because it doesn't make any sense why they have such a massive emo Latino fan base.
People have, I think, who is this that broke it down? They love Latinos are very emotional people.
Oh,
you can see that the way that MS-13 like lops heads off and shit like that. They're very emotional. They run by their emotions. And so Morrissey is the most in touch with his emotions than most artists out there.
Right.
And so they connect and they love. So it all just like, you know, if you listen to like Elvis Crespo or the guy that does Suavemente, it's all just about love.
Right.
All those crooners are just either about the cartel stuff.
That's what Morrissey is too.
You know, and
he's
also
emotion stuff.
Also, they're into fucking pale fucking,
that's it,
you know, like British guys that don't eat meat. But I don't, you know, fuck it, dude. It took me fucking, you know, 40 years to get into the Smiths.
Yeah. Yeah, and, that's true. Me too. I got into them later. So. I actually had tickets to see him with a chick, and then I broke up, so I had to scalp the tickets. And this guy was like, offered me like 50%. I'm like, come on, man, it's sold out. He's like, well, it's in 2 days. Sorry. take it or leave it. I was like, ugh, fine.
Take it.
And then I got a call because I put it up on Facebook. Got a call from, I forget who.
Is that a Huge Smiths fan?
Yeah, just a comic. Aaron Lee. Lee. And he goes, hey, do you still, me and my wife are friends, do you still have those tickets? I'll give you face value for them. I'm like, yeah, sure. And the guy called. He's like, so can I pick him up later today? I'm like, I sold him. He's like, we had a deal. I'm like, nah, you were shortchanging me. So I went around.
Nice.
I don't have any allegiance to you, bro. I asked you for face value at a sold out show and you said I could bargain me. So now you have no tickets.
Yeah, fuck
goes,
that,
I already
dude.
Told my chick I'm getting tickets. I'm like, that's something you should have to deal with.
Yeah, you should have paid full price.
Yeah, motherfucker.
Why am I losing money to help
you out? I get why
you'd
be upset. You thought you were so fucking great bargaining me down on a sold out show. And now look at you. You're divorced, hopefully, and childless.
Why didn't you go by yourself?
Nah, I was only into it because the girl was into
it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I wasn't even that into them.
I go to shows constantly by myself, and I love it.
I went to LCD with Dan Soder, and then he had to leave to go take a dump.
What?
Ugh. So I'm sitting there on my own, not Molly, mushrooms.
Nice.
He was not. Maybe that's why he wasn't having as good a time, because he brought his chick. So he's like, I'm like, do you want to do mushrooms? He's like, no. I'm like, yeah, me neither. I just took him quietly. you know, you don't have to tell everybody you're mushrooms every time. Yeah. Just for me.
Also, you know how to handle yourself. You know how to
dose. I know how to handle myself.
Yeah, so it's like they would have no idea. You're just in the music.
And I'm jumping around having a great time because we got this cool, it was a little lopped off, but it was right in front of a barrier for the VIP section. So nothing could be in front of us.
Nice.
The barrier. So I could jump up and hold on to that barrier. And then I'm jumping up and down. I love them. And then and they start singing like, where are your friends tonight? And I'm like, my friend is home taking a dump.
Taking a shit.
Because he fucking took out McDonald's all
wait,
week.
Wait, yeah. I think the night that y'all went to go see LCD Sound System,
Bonnaroo.
Jay and I, Jay and I was it on a Saturday? Because I think we went to go see
Saturday, Pearl Jam or Sunday.
No, this isn't at Bonnaroo. I'm talking about when you went to go see LCD Sound System.
Oh.
Jay and I think went to go see Genesis.
Oh, really?
At Madison. Wait, no, because it was at Madison Square Garden.
No, LCD show, was not. LCD is at Terminal 5.
Oh, well then I think that was LCD. I'm almost positive, which talking about the complete opposite spectrum where you know, James is like up there, he's sweating, wearing the white shirt. The band fucking looks cool and they're awesome. And then Genesis, it was literally Phil Collins like in a chair. Like you could see him in pain on fentanyl.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. It was, I don't think we've ever been more excited and more let down for a concert in our whole lives. Especially from what I think he paid. You know what I mean? Because it was like his Christmas present for me. And I was like, great seats. Oh, this will rule. And then it just suck.
People get too old. Well, let's get back to Liz Fair. We were talking about LCD and whatever, plays like that, dancing. Oh, that's why, because you can't dance to this. It's intentionally downbeat. I don't know. I like alt rock better than rap. I never got into rap. It's not an issue, but I like lyrics and I can't understand the lyrics in rap. Same thing with screamo. I'm like, I'm sure there's music here. If I can't hear the lyrics, I can't sing along with them, you know? Which, like, Derek and Moreau, they like, have heard the songs long enough that it was like, oh, they know the lyrics, but I'm like, I need to just be able to hear it.
Is that what you connected with as far as this record? I was trying to get to the bottom.
Because it was a sound. It's just a sound. Because a lot of times I didn't even understand it. Like, I was just listening to this again for this, and she's like, this has always been going on fucking run. She's like pretty much saying, this has always been going on. This has happened not just now, not just as 20... probably then, she was probably 24, 25. She was not just a 24, 25-year-old where I just said, like, I want a boyfriend. I don't want to just randomly fuck. And I didn't understand this then at all. No way I could have as a virgin at University of Maryland. I can understand it now, and I've been there. You've been there, too. I'm like, I'm fucking too much. I just wanted to, like, have a girlfriend. It's different from girls. But
it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's exhausting. And then you're like, and then here I am again. I said, I'm only going to date people now. I'm not going to just fuck. And then here I am waking up some guy's bed. And she goes, this has been going on even when I was 17. And you're like, oh. And she goes, and even when I was 12.
Yeah.
And then just stops. And it goes,
yeah.
And like, let's just sink in on you. And she's like, this has been going on for quite a while. And I can't stop this fucking thing. I didn't relate to any of that. I related to the sound.
Yeah. All right. So that song. So, all right, so everybody knows, there right before this came out, Liz put out a demo tape called Girly Sound. And it kind of like filtered its way through. Well, here, let me.
That was her old band.
Let me pull up. Let me do the little background on this. So here's a little background on Liz Phair for everybody that wants to know. So she's born Elizabeth Clark Phair, born in New Haven, Connecticut in 67.
Adopted?
She's adopted. Yep. Grew up in Cincinnati, then the Chicago area. After a failed attempt to getting a music career going in San Francisco in the early 90s, she returned back to Chicago and released audio cassettes under the name Girly Sound. These tapes eventually led her to get a deal with independent label Matador Records.
Matador, I remember Matador. They had a lot of bands. I forgot who, but I remember them being a real label.
I remember hearing their name, but I don't know what other bands were with them.
Yeah.
Her debut record and today's topic, Exile in Guyville, came out in 93. Then she had her follow-up, Whip Smart, in 94. She earned a Grammy nomination. Whip Smart,
that's one Supernova on. That was a Grammy nomination for that one?
There was a Grammy nomination for Best Female Rock Performance in 95. With
Wait,
Supernova.
And did she get a Grammy for or nomination for the first one, Exile in Guyville?
No.
Isn't that interesting? When something gets recognized way later.
Because they fucked
they,
up.
And they do makeup calls.
They fucked up.
Like Denzel Washington getting the award for best actor when he's like
for
not
training
the lead
day?
Actor.
For training? I think he deserved it for Training Day.
Supporting actor. He was supporting actor. He wasn't the lead.
I think equal. No. I think almost.
No. No. He was never in a scene by himself. The other guy was. He was a supporting actor.
Yeah,
and
but
also he was fine Training Day, but like relax.
But all right, dude. But,
makeup call.
But for, yes. And what they
it's
did,
a makeup call.
So Beck should have won for Odelay or Sea Change.
Sea Change.
And so what they do is they give it to him for the one that came
it's
out a few years
people
ago.
People voting are kind of idiots, and they're just like, "Oh, I heard everyone's talking about this," and it's like, it's the same reason that comedy kind of sucks on Netflix now because people are like, "Well, I heard that person's really good," and you're like, "Yeah, that was 10 years ago. Have you seen them since? Are they working hard? Are they not working hard?
Yeah.
Do you have any idea?"
Yeah,
there's a wild range of like ways you can go after you get on a sitcom. You can work real hard like Burr did, or you can stop working completely like Pete Davidson did. They're different comics, you
yeah
know?
for sure
you can't just be like I saw them once
for sure. I couldn't agree with you more. 100% they fuck up. Actually, really cool, a few weeks ago I became friends with Tom Morello right before the pandemic.
Which pandemic?
You know, the Spanish flu.
Okay.
And he hit me up because he did the podcast. We've stayed in touch. And he goes, "Hey, Josh," he goes, "I'm recommending you to be one of the voters for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame."
No, really?
Yeah. And I mean, immediately I'm like, I don't think I know enough music. But dude, I'm like we keep getting these votes for Stone Temple Pilots in. And I'm just like, no, they deserve. Trust me, they deserve to be
great.
In there. But it's because that's what I'm saying. That's how ridiculous the Grammys are.
It's all, and also for Grammys for comedy, it's always like, oh, these are just celebrities.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They were always nominating, like, who's the chick from Suddenly Susan?
Oh, fuck. I know what you're talking about. Kathy Griffin?
Kathy Griffin, Bob Saget, Margaret Cho. It was always these same names with an occasional mixed in, like Pat
Louis
Oswalt, Louis C.K. But, like, a lot of them were like, Bob Saget, you know, rest in peace. He sucked as a comic. He was a bad comic. So to get nominated again and again is like, I don't think you guys are listening to these. Like, why has Kyle Kinane never been nominated for a Grammy?
100%.
Over Kathy Griffin.
100%.
Like, what are we talking about? So you guys, it became very clear, you're not listening to any of these.
No. And the same thing with the records.
Yeah.
Which is 100% shocking because none of those other records by Liz Phair are on this list. And yet this one is in the top 100 now.
Her next one, I should just say, White Chocolate Space Egg. It was one of the first albums I could see that I'm like, oh, someone's helping her write this. This is pop.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Well, there's elements of pop in this record.
Maybe some slight ones, but I mean,
Never, what is the song that I found? Never Said.
Is that her one big hit
that's,
on there?
That's, this was the first of two singles released off the record. A music video was also made. This is one from Girly Sound.
This was like more mainstream. You could see that. Then she got some like some guitar in there a little bit, but it was still that alt guitar that like Julianne Hatfield III kind of guitar and like there were all these rockers in the 90s, rocker chicks.
Who would you have in mind?
Julianne Hatfield.
Oh, you're talking about the ones that are just like one, because there's a lot of one and done. Frente, remember Frente? Did you like Frente?
I had that album.
I got that from Publishers Clearinghouse. Really? I got Frente.
Publishers Clearinghouse?
Well, whatever the fucking
BMG and Columbia House.
Yeah, Columbia House. You know what I meant.
I was like, did I miss a whole angle on free shit?
I could have just been sitting there.
Frente was a good one. They were Australian, I think.
Yeah, she was adorable.
They had a remake, was their one big hit.
It was the song by the group that did Blue Monday, New Order. Every time I see you falling.
Yeah, and I heard their version first. Same as us.
So did I.
Yeah, same as I Shot Sheriff. And then when I heard the original version, I'm like, what the fuck is this? You know. So there was all these girl rockers, and that's what Lilith Fair came out of, where it's like, hey, girls can play, but it was a specific sound. It was a specific sound, and that song that you just played had that guitar sound.
Yeah.
Of the girl rocker. So here's how much I was into women music.
Yeah, take
it. I had my CDs organized on a CD shelf, split up by male lead, female lead, and then soundtracks. And the female leads was probably 70% of the male leads. So it wasn't even, but there were very few chicks in rock back then. Their numbers are probably like 20%, and I had them at 70%.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, all the Sarah McLachlan shit, all the fucking this, every one of her albums.
Why do you connect with female music? They're
better voices. Their voices
so
are
So it's
way,
strictly
way more,
voice.
Yeah. It's a way more soothing, pleasurable voice to hear a woman singing over a
Has
man.
That, let me ask you now, because when you're in your, you know, you're in college when you're starting to get into this, and now as you've grown up and you're an adult, like, do you connect still just with the voices or have the lyrics and the perspective of what this woman is saying?
I like the lyrics more. I like something like, and so now I'm more into like, I got into stuff that was already out that I had wasn't into, like the drums on War Pigs. I'm just like, I'll stop every time and listen to it. I'm like, wait, fuck, what's he doing? Doesn't make any sense. But like, never usually into drums, you know. I go through a more of a hard rock phase, and then also as I got into different drugs, then I'll start liking different bands.
For sure. Drugs definitely change, dude. I took mushrooms and went to go see Billy Joel like a week or so ago. Yeah. It's one of the best music experience live I've ever. Not tripping balls. Like a gram and a half, just enough to see the squiggles.
Yeah.
And I cried like four times. Oh, wow. I felt it on such a deeper level. It was just, I'm going every month.
Yeah.
I want to go every month. That's like, if I'm going
to. I still want to go to that once.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you is because did you go to HF Festival?
No.
You never did.
But I did not. I was too young and sheltered. To the idea of going and spending a bunch of money to a music festival, I remember hearing the ads for it. I'm like, that sounds cool, but I didn't even know what live music really was. We saw a couple bands at Maryland, like,
Maryland would have like your, like, I remember I saw Chappelle there when my friends were going there.
So the comedy was every other semester. So one semester would be like Chappelle, and then it'd be like John Reap, you know, someone who was just a college, and then Margaret Cho, and then you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like that. Music, I think, was the same way, because we saw who's the fucking stinky guy with fucking 75 people in his band.
Oh, man.
Smells horrible.
Wait, come on.
Black.
Black stink. Oh, George Clinton.
George Clinton, yeah. So one semester was him, stinky guy.
Are you sure that he stinks?
Yeah, he stinks.
Cocoa butter, dude. Cocoa butter. No, come on,
that's
man.
Body odor.
Patchouli and cocoa butter.
Straight butter. So one semester was him. Next semester, Guster. Okay. You know? So we'd have some cool bands, but that's as much as I could see. So, like, let's just go walk by the quads. He was there.
No, this has nothing to do with music, because I don't ever see you as a sheltered person. The last thing I would say about you, Ari, is that you are sheltered. When did that switch happen and how?
Not even at Maryland. I mean, at Maryland is when University of Maryland. I'm wearing the shirt. Is where you know I lost some of my innocence, but only the massive innocence. Like I lost my virginity. But
it's a big part.
But it wasn't like I was instantly a whore. You know what I mean? I was still a very sheltered, like, how many women we had sex with? At the end of college, the number was 2. So, you know what I mean? If you tell me someone who wasn't raised Orthodox Jewish and said, how many women have you had sex with at the end of college? And they said 2. You're like, oh, you're very sheltered. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So then when did it? Because now, dude, you are.
Yeah.
One thing I love about you is you are you. And you do whatever the fuck you want. You're not sheltered. Whether it's fucking around, you know, on a podcast or whatever. You live and you be.
Yeah, I'd like to be myself.
You're Nietzsche, dude. You're just like, the who gives a fuck? So how did you suddenly.
Comedy store.
The comedy store is what changed you?
Yeah, yeah. When I got there, I had never smoked. Had smoked a couple cigarettes, but that was it. But then I remember a manager. I forget his name. It doesn't matter. I was working the back door, and he would always come over for a cigarette. He's like, you got a cigarette? I'm like, I don't smoke. And he's like, all right. And again, got a cigarette? I'm like, I don't smoke. You know, a day later, 2 days later. And then he started going, start smoking yet? And I'm like, no, no. And then one day he was like, start smoking yet? I'm like, yeah. And he goes, give me a cigarette. I was like, okay. It was just like, you're there. That's where everybody smokes. You eventually start. You meet like whores, just fuck pigs.
Yeah, I know.
And you also meet comedians from such vastly different backgrounds. So when you're 19, you might meet someone in your dorm who's a little less sheltered than you, who fucks a little or is a little wild, drinks some, whatever. But it's as a 19-year-old college-bound person, like how wild really are they? You know, there's a range, but it's just limits. Stand-up comedy, there's people who didn't even go to college. There's people who Painter lost his virginity at 14 and got robbed halfway through, you know, and then also won't say the word God, only says gosh. It's like there's such massive difference. Kevin Rook was this like Christian lawyer from Alabama, Arkansas.
Yeah.
He was just with us as the rest of us are looking at fucking chicks getting fucked by dogs. And it's just like it just brings together these wild scenes. And also L.A.
Yeah, they bring it out of you for sure.
All these runaways.
Yeah.
And so you start. You know, I saw coke for the first time. I didn't even do it. I was like, oh my God. No, thanks, you guys. You go ahead. I had a glass table like this on Stoner Avenue in West LA. And so I went to the bathroom after a party. They were just there with lines. I was like, oh my God.
And it's shocking when you don't expect cocaine and you see it for the first time.
Yeah, for the first time. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
It was like, whoa. And over a few years of that, I just became.
Changed.
It was the comedy store. There was no success there. It wasn't like it is now. Oh, people, listeners, probably imagine the comedy store now. It was start to finish from 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. We'd have 25 people there throughout the whole night.
I know. Yeah.
Many nights we couldn't start the show because Mitzi had a rule it had to be 8 people. Eventually she changed that to 6 because we just couldn't get shows started. 6 people. And it was still like show was supposed to start at 9. At 9:45, we're all just sitting in the cover booth just waiting with 2 audience members there going, what's going on? I mean, it was terrible. But that just allowed us to just become who we were. It gave us our X-Men powers. Whatever they were going to be, they got pulled out of us.
Everybody that I know that worked during that era, there's something about them. The strength of them on stage is better. Like,
nothing could beat us down because we've been beaten down too much. She just prepared us intentionally or unintentionally for these horrible like situations that are going to come up.
Yeah.
Bad shows. And on stage, too, like... When there's a showcase and it's like, oh, the crowd's not great. A comedy store. From back then, a comedy store comic would be like, not a problem.
I can work with this.
A good crowd.
Yeah.
I remember Caparulo, he did New Faces. And I remember once it was like a Columbus Day weekend and there were 60 people in the OR. And it seats
That's 20, big?
Seats 120, 150.
Yeah, but 60 was good for them,
yeah,
right?
I was like, oh my God.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And we all just obliterated the place because it was so... But Caparulo did New Faces and he said he was on whatever number he was on. The person got off before him. And he's like, how are they? And she's like, or maybe she goes, oh, they're a little tight. He goes, a little tight? There's 300 people out there. What do you mean a little tight?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And then he got his development deal because he was just a comedy store comic.
Yeah.
So he was like, you're giving me. I heard Kansas University used to practice on a smaller rim. They would add a rim to the top of the rim. So you'd have to swish it down the middle to get it. And then in game time, they take that off and it was just a massive hole.
Yeah.
That's how Comedy Store was.
Yeah,
on stage and in real life.
Yeah, 100%. The shitty gigs, like if like I'll get put up late night at the Cellar, and it's like they're drunk, they're wild, and so when you get that audience that is like that is like an early show, and you just still keep that attitude of like you're performing in front of that.
This?
Yeah, it's like this. I'm used to them being drunk, wild, organizing.
That's Tripoli. Was always like his two superpowers were doing well at bar shows.
That's true.
And being able to fuck on coke. He said those were two superpowers. He goes, yeah, I know. People say you can't get hard. He goes, that's not my issue. but yeah, it's the Comedy Store, that battle late night. There was no success. And the people who were successful got the early spots. And even their success wasn't much. It was Bobby Lee being on Mad TV.
Yeah.
Freddie Soto having had a development deal.
Spanglish.
Cap, it hadn't happened yet.
Okay.
It was still off in the distance. Capanera was just a Vegas comic. Ralphie May had done a special, maybe, you know. Rogan was on news radio. He was there sometimes. It was just like Schubert was like, he used to be in The Outlaw. Like, these aren't credits that people are kind of coming to see these people.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, Rogan was on a
like, big show.
Top 40 show.
Yeah.
That lasted for 5 years, that was over 5 years earlier. You know, it ain't a draw.
True. So when did it, I know there's probably, you watched a documentary for this, but I'm just curious, because I haven't watched it yet. When did it fucking make that shift then?
It made the shift when Joe Rogan started podcasting. He wasn't even coming around at that time because there was a feud between him and Mencia.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and the Comedy Store took the wrong side. They should have stayed out of it. Mitzi would have stayed out of it. Mitzi did stay out of it. She actually called Joe and said, hey, you guys got to figure out how to work together because, you know, I don't do this thing where I get involved in like, well, it's me or him. She goes, I'm not doing that. I'm giving you each spots. She goes, she made a rule a long time before that's like, any ideas of who steals who jokes, she goes, that's you guys to work it out.
You guys figure it. Yeah.
You guys know. I don't. So I don't want to make the wrong ruling on this. So choke whoever you got to choke. You know, let the streets deal with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she never wanted anyone to go away. Unless she thought they were terrible or, you know, did something to her specifically. So she called Joe and was like, hey, you guys got to figure it out. And she goes, all right. And then he got a call like 10 minutes later saying, hey, Mitzi wants you to take a break for a while. And he was like, no, she doesn't. He was like, well, we talked to her. He goes, I just talked to her.
Yeah.
You're lying. Because it was a moment where Paulie was like, didn't like Joe. It was just like other thing. And they use that as an excuse. Kind of like what they say with 9/11. Like the government, they don't think plan 9/11. But like once it happened, they're like, sweet, let's use this.
Yeah, Iraq.
Get all the shit we wanted to do. So anyway, he was gone, and he did draw somewhat, especially when he was on Fear Factor.
Yeah,
when he was there, but when he left, it just became kind of back to abysmal every night. Weekends were always okay, you know, before that. But then he started talking about it on podcasts, talking about Brett Ernst and fun, weird stories, and the Comedy Store started getting a bit of a lore of like, whoa, what's this outlaw place? Because it really was people fucking in the back.
And, oh yeah.
Punching Bobby Lee, you know, shit like that, where it's just like fights are going on and like fucking it just, you meet a girl and then she goes and sits back down next to her boyfriend or a date at least, and all like, that chick just blew you in there, look how we're being all snuggly with that guy. Yeah. It's crazy. So that shit, you see that and you're like, I can't respect women.
Yeah,
I can't respect any women. I've seen the worst possible things.
Yeah.
I know what they're capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is LA for sure.
For sure.
And me and Metzke used to talk about women and LA versus New York comics. And at some point he goes, oh, Ari, all your anger towards women, I don't think that's women. I think it's LA women. I think it's a specific type of runaway, needy, I want to be famous at all costs
woman. Love them out here. Yeah. Love every, dude, I'm dating out here. I'm meeting great girls.
They're great.
LA.
They're professional. They're like, they leave after you fuck. They're like, well, I got work in the morning. I want to track to success. I'm not staying at some dude's house.
Yeah, they'll take the train.
Later, we'll see. Yeah, exactly. How should I walk you to the train? Like, why? So I can get right on the train once you're gone? I have mace, you idiot. I'm like, all right. I don't know. But yeah, and then Rogan started talking about it, started getting more and more popular. He wasn't even there yet. Then he came back.
That was when Tommy left. I remember
He came back and Tommy was still there. And then Adam Egot took over. And then Adam Egot was like, I have no allegiance to Mitzi. I've never met her. Maybe he had met her once. I don't know. But he goes, I'm just booking the funny comics. So he called Sarah Silverman's of the world, Hannibal Buress's, and was like, hey, you're obviously beyond showcasing. Here's the number to call in. You can't bump. Here's the number to call in. We'd love to have you. And then they all start coming. David Spade. They all just start coming.
Yeah.
And that's when it got what they call now the credit store, which is not my favorite iteration of the store.
Yeah, it's definitely changed.
It's not a workout anymore. I mean, some of it is like it's always for 28-year-olds. So you're supposed to get bigger, do a sitcom, move on, and stop coming back. People stayed. Now the comedy's better. Comedy pays more, so people stay in it. People like Whitney would not be doing comedy anymore. You know, that in the old days, that she just would have been an actress. There's no,
sure.
There's
no 100%
put out a special every once in a while.
But also, I think there was something really, you know, like you said, dude, like Adam started bringing in people and now it's this popping place. Yeah. So now it was just a scene.
Yeah, it's a scene.
It's a scene.
It's a scene. You can't just work out a new joke. People are like, oh, I heard Ari not do that well. And it's like, so now you have to do your A material. It's dumb. It's dumb. It's shitty.
How do you think Liz would have done at the Comedy Store?
Liz who?
Liz Phair.
You mean like if the Comedy Store is music?
If just in her, if like the Rogans are what band, like the Pearl Jam. I'm trying to think of like the big bands at the time going around with what she's doing. Oh, like,
yeah, she would have been, let me see what she would have been. Maybe Cynthia Levin. So many people came in to see. I mean, this is the old store. So you're just talking about a girl who's funny. It wouldn't be Vicky Barbalak. Vicky Barbalak was too mainstream. She was too Vegas in her style.
Yeah.
She crushed, but that's not Liz Phair. Yeah, yeah. Kelly Kirsten or
she's a good joke writer because obviously she's got to be a good joke writer because lyrically this album is.
She'd be a good joke writer. People would come in like, wow, she's really funny, but it wouldn't be slang, you know, like a shredding guitar because it's not that. Anyway, I don't know. But this album was a period in my life in college when I was sort of like coming into a little bit of my own, like finding out who I was. I started college at 20, started University of Maryland at 21. For 21 and 24, 24, I guess. Those are formidable years. This kind of shit was a soundtrack to that.
Do you think someone like Madonna, who I think in a sense is like the polar opposite of Liz Phair, an image...
Yeah.
But do you think she paved the way for the lyrics that Liz wrote on this record?
I don't know. I know. I remember hearing an interview with her a long time ago. Also, she has stage fright, which is really interesting.
Liz Phair
won't get on stage or didn't for a while.
I just watched an interview with her and she's so like low energy, awkward-ish, adorable. Like she's really cute. But they're For sure she did.
Being sexually open. You know, so Liz Phair going like, yeah, I fuck. For sure I fuck. You know, I'm not like saying, look at me, I fuck. It's like, hey, I fuck and here's some of the problems I've run into. You know, and people are like, you fuck? And it's like, yeah, but we're past that. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm dealing with the problems of a sexual like youth, fucking older men, fucking in general without dating. But she's like, these are givens to my scene. I'm in the rock scene in Chicago. We're way further along than the fucking, you know, mainstream FCC kind of shit they let you see.
So is that, because I'm trying to figure out why this is number 56.
Yeah, even why it's number 312.
Why is it on it? Dude, this
right,
is
why
like.
Why is it on it? It had to be like something really groundbreaking. Maybe the deadpan music and the deadpan like.
The sound?
Exactly.
Let me see if I got a little doodad on the recording of this just to kind of, because I tried to look up a bunch of shit to fucking.
Yeah, why is it that big? Because honestly, I liked her second album better.
Which I think was a lot bigger.
Yeah. So like Pinkerton, I thought was.
Better than the Blue Record?
But you understand why the Blue Record, when it came out, it was like, it's almost a new sound.
It's, 100%.
It's nerd rock that's not nerd. I don't know what it was, but I'm like, it was like, whoa. Pinkerton was awesome. And I think better, but it didn't have that like, what the fuck? Didn't have that.
Yeah, nothing was like Weezer at that time. Yeah, exactly. And look, I'm trying to.
Was this higher or lower than the Blue Album?
Blue Album is coming up. I haven't done it yet.
Okay.
So I think that's in the next like fifth.
But you're going by the old list.
I'm going by. Oh, you want to look at the new one? Hold on, let me pull it up.
Because there's no way the Blue Album should be lower than this.
In 2020, Rolling Stone ranked it number 294 on their list of 500 greatest albums of all time. It was ranked. So on this list, it's 299.
It went up five.
Yeah. This is the Blue Album.
Yeah.
Yes.
And went up five.
Yes.
That's interesting because it's overcorrection.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
I remember this Q, remember Q magazine?
Yes.
Yeah, and they did a list of top whatever 100 albums. And OK Computer was number one. And it had come out 4 or 5 months earlier. And I remember going like, you guys, you haven't sat on this long enough. You gotta
say, caught up in the,
you gotta
say caught up
top
in
100
the,
albums
in the...
of 5 years ago and beyond.
Sure.
You know, you're caught up in like, well, everybody's talking about it. I was like, I know, but Steve Miller Band at the time was bigger than they are now against their peers, you know? Certain bands just hold up, certain ones don't hold up. In excess now, it's like, don't have the fucking claim to fame, but they're great. They're
yes,
underrated.
Okay, good. I wanted to see where you were going
but
with
like,
that.
But people don't remember them as much. But like at the time, they're now, I think as people are remembering them again, they're back where they were then.
In excess?
In excess, sure. In their rankings. But like for a while, people are like, who? And you're like, how could that be who? What do you mean?
Yeah, Kick is such a great
record.
So
you got to wait some time. So I don't mind Blue Album moving up 5, you know, 10 years later, about 8 years after.
8 years later.
Yeah, that's fine. But like this one, that's a giant
jump.
But
this
is
a jump. This, yeah. Yes, who cares? You're 100% right. But by you putting this up there and then leaving off like Fiona Apple Records off of this list and leaving
off.
I don't think Fiona has, she might have one record on this list. I'd have to look.
See, that first one was so good.
But it's, and maybe not the second one, but on the new list, every record is on there because that's a new generation that was influenced by him. I have never in my career of doing this or even in life had somebody besides you say to me Liz Phair was influential in my life.
Oh, I loved her.
I can hear like where this album has affected so many other artists now.
Yeah,
you know, there was a time
I was jealous of Joe Rogan. I don't listen to podcasts. I barely listen to mine, only when I'm editing it or when I was.
Yeah.
There was a time when I had definitely listened to under 10 podcasts ever, and one of them was Liz Phair on Rogan's. And I was on a plane, and I was like, couldn't wait to hear it. Because I was like, oh, she's so cool. She's just the coolest. But
wow, that just
I wanted to hear about her stage fright. I couldn't hear about
that. Just blows me away.
Yeah.
I just would never, I would have thought
yeah,
you would.
Some of these college bands were fucking big, but she was bigger in my head than Suzanne Vega. She was bigger in my head than like Dave Matthews, even though Dave Matthews is definitely bigger.
You're a big Dave Matthews fan. You mentioned him a few times.
No, because I never got into them, but they were heavy into that scene.
Yes.
They were heavy into that scene.
That was a fun concert.
Coldplay took over that scene. But in that one was that same range where it's like, this is too...
I wouldn't put Coldplay with Liz Phair.
No. So Blues Traveler, not Blues Traveler.
I wouldn't put them with Blues Traveler either.
I would put them.
Blues I would Traveler. Put Blues. What?
Yeah, it's in that same. That was more high energy than Liz Phair. But Dave Matthews' band was the big stadium rock
for sure.
And so Coldplay came in that same genre, and it was too accessible. Too many people liked him. Liz Phair was more niche, and I like that.
Very
so was Blues Traveler.
Yeah, dude. I put Dave Matthews with Blues Traveler, and I put Coldplay with Radiohead.
It was just like in that HFS genre, these are the other people also liked them.
When I went to go, like, the first year I went to go to HF Festival, I was really into Coldplay. Coldplay, this is like 19, I would say 2000 at the latest.
Yeah.
Maybe 2001, but I'm almost positive it was 2000. And Coldplay was on the bill, but they were deep on the bill. And I was like, dude, like, I'm excited. We got to go see Coldplay. I don't know what time they're going up because there's no real solid internet at the time to look up. And my friend Johnny's girlfriend Lisa was super fucking running behind and slowing us down. And we're in College Park, so we got to take the metro to RFK Stadium. And the whole time we're on there, because it's like now at this point it's 2:00, 2:30,
yeah.
And I'm like, dude, we're gonna fucking miss the band. And I make a joke. I'm like, bet what happens is we show up And like, as we're walking into the stadium, they're just like, and we were all yellow. Thank you all so much. You were great. 100%. That's what happened. To the letter of the law.
Yeah, it was just really cool and really great music, and it was really like interesting, and it was just like ushered us into this new way of, I don't know, this new type of music that wasn't just this, like, pop.
So I got this little
top 40.
I got this little nugget from this article. The album remains incredibly impactful to this day because Liz Phair created a space for moody rockers looking to kick some ass and take some names while also exploring the heartbreak and sensitivities that come with being a young person.
I'm glad they said person, because from everything I've read about her, and when you say like this is a response to Exile on Main Street, your first thought in living in the day we are today, day and age we are today with this zeitgeist, is like she's going to be attacking.
I mean, she's not.
She's not. She goes, they rock. I want to rock. It's not gender based at all, you know? It's just like, I want to rock, and so or do interesting music the way they are. So this is a response to them. But if you said like she's this feminist icon, but it's like, I don't think she would even put that on herself.
I don't think so either.
I'm just doing music. And so for her to say the fucking run or stuff like that, it's like, well, this is interesting for a woman to be talking like this. Like, yeah, guys, but I'm not doing this feminist shit. I'm just talking about my experience, a person. As a person, not me as a woman, which that is what I can relate to. It's like, this is a person going through something. When you start breaking down into a gender or a race, you lose me, because if I'm not in that gender or race, then it's like you're talking about your situation instead of going, even if it's like, hey, I was in a place and they came and they took my parents. And they took them away, and they put me in the work camp. Like, oh my God, that's terrible. You don't have to say if it was Rwanda or fucking
it's bad, Japan, regardless. We all can identify with it.
I can relate to you. But when they go, they took the Jews away, then if you're not a Jew, then it's like, I'm out.
It cuts off everything.
Yeah, exactly. She was just a person.
I think that is, you know, it's a really good perspective that I didn't even think about. Is that, because I always did, while listening to this, just assume she was talking about the girl and like her experience. But almost every song from Fucking Run to 6 Foot One.
I would never have said that if I knew how that would make you feel. When I went to separate rooms, if I knew how that would make you feel, I would have taken it all back. I would do it again just to...
I still think the best lyrics on the record are from Dance of the Seven Veils. She goes, I ask because I'm a real cunt in spring. You can rent me by the hour. I know all about the ugly pilgrim thing. Entertainers bring Mayflowers. I just love that she has cunt. I just love that she says cunt in a song. And
she's talking about herself.
She's
not bragging. She's like, I'm a real cunt in spring.
But this is like, dude, that's such a word that if you hear, dude, if you say that on stage... You better fucking have a funny response or whatever.
It is hard to remember time and place and things. COVID is definitely, you hear something like, what? You're like, oh, 8 months ago was way different, you know, or whatever it is. But like when you see a Joan Rivers bit about abortion and you're like, okay, whatever, it's an abortion joke. But then you look closer, you're like, oh, this is black and white. So like, that's easier to see because like, oh, definitely this was not talked about then.
Yeah.
You know, so her doing it. So or like something in the news.
Yeah.
A bit. And you record it, let's say. Something happened yesterday, you recorded it tomorrow. And you put it out. Everyone's like, this is really funny. In 3 weeks, people are like, this isn't that funny.
Sure.
And you're like, well, yeah, it was going fast. You know, that it's the time that I recorded it it meant something. A year later, Abraham Lincoln joke, a Columbine joke now. People are like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You did it the day after. It had some fucking danger.
Sure.
It, you know? So I don't know what her time and place was. I don't really know.
I
don't know what else was out there before or who else.
This would be a perfect time to have Adam.
The Chicago music scene back then?
Well, she keeps mentioning these two bands, which really I don't think are really that big in...
Because they never made it, but...
One of them did. So these are the two bands, Material Issue, which I've never heard of, and then Urge Overkill.
I remember Urge Overkill.
Urge Overkill, I'm almost positive, did Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon from the Pulp Fiction soundtrack.
Yeah. So they probably ran. Do you ever see you ever read the book or seen it? Meet Me in the Bathroom. It's about the aughts, the early aughts, like electronic punk, or I don't know what you would call it, music scene in New York. It was LCD. It was Karen O. I'm trying to think who else was there. But all these bands, they knew who each other. They knew each other, you know, and that was the New York scene. Go back a few years to the 80s and you have Rolling Stone, I mean, Guns N' Roses on the Sunset Strip, Motley Crue, all the LA, they must have known each other.
Oh, they all did.
They just shows in town so much. And then they occasionally tour. But they did these in-town shows and they hung out with each other. And there must have been the Chicago scene, you know, where they all knew who the big bands were. Whether or not they made it, Heroin might have gotten involved. I mean, you look at Nirvana saying Mudhoney is our biggest influence and most people go, who's Mudhoney? You know?
Yeah.
But just because they didn't make it doesn't mean they weren't huge and like everyone around them was like, damn, they're the guys right there. You have that in comedy too. You'll have people like, wow, that guy's great. But everyone else is like, who is that? You're like, well, they're just someone who's great.
So I'm pulling up some of the bands from that scene. You know, fuck, I hope this is somewhat right. People are going to get mad at me. It says Smashing Pumpkins.
Pumpkins.
Is from that era. They're from Chicago. At least according to this fucking article. Smashing Pumpkins. They're talking about Jimmy Chamberlain. Yeah, this is all I think about. Oh, Wilco.
Wilco. They were Chicago, huh?
Yeah. But I don't know if they're all contemporaries. I'm just looking at, like, you know, this came out here. That's a good before we
92, 93.
This came out in
the one with Supernova, Whip Smart. That was 94. And I got into that
1993.
It was 93.
So, all right. So this is what's out.
Yeah.
Nirvana In Utero.
Okay.
So you've already got
In Utero is before Nevermind.
No, it's after.
After, okay.
So Nevermind's already, the Seattle Sound has already taken over.
Yeah.
Seattle Sound's the biggest thing in the world right now.
Yeah, this is not grunge.
No, God, no. Wu-Tang Enter the 36 Chambers.
Okay, that's having a rap.
You have something like Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream. These are the 25 most essential albums. Siamese
Dream, that's what I'm thinking of.
Siamese Dream. Gish was before that. Yeah. That was the big one with
Siamese
today.
Siamese Dream is when I got into them.
But then, on the opposite side of the world, which we've already done this record, you have PJ Harvey, which I wouldn't...
She's English? I used to mix them up a lot. PJ Harvey, Liz Phair, I would mix them up a
really?
Lot.
Really?
Only because...
They kind of look somewhat...
Because they had a P in their names.
Yeah.
at the beginning of one of their names. Yeah, their sound was very different. But it was also this, like, independent woman stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And you have Janet Jackson releasing the biggest album. Well, no, I guess Rhythm Nation, but Janet, you know, Depeche, Tony Braxton, The Breeders.
The Breeders. That's more in this range of what we're talking about.
Cypress Hill, Flaming Lips. You have Bjork coming out with her debut record. You have Lenny Kravitz, Are You Gonna Go My Way? I mean, this is Blur, Modern Life is Rubbish. You have Pet Shop Boys, Tool.
This was Pet Shop Boys, Tool's a little hard, but like, this was the heyday of alt rock.
Ooh, I got a better idea. 1992 essential albums. Let's see what. See this. All right. So this is what's coming out before that. I mean, these are Jesus Christ. All right. REM, Automatic for the People. I could see that in a way influencing this record. Uh-huh. the Chronic, by Dr. Dre. So you have Pavement. You have Check Your Head. I mean, these are all just metal albums. Oh, The Cure, Wish. So,
Wish was a good one.
Gin Blossoms.
Uh huh. That's alt rock for sure. When I started listening to it, Gin Blossoms.
Gin Blossoms, I would put
underrated. What?
Very underrated, but I would put Gin Blossoms closer to Liz Phair.
Yeah.
Than
Blues Traveler.
You keep wanting to talk about blues. Do you like Blues Traveler?
No, but I mean, it was like that. They were just played on the same station.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. So in 1992, Suzanne Vega 99.9 Fahrenheit came out.
Yeah,
Suzanne That's Vega. A little bit more electronic. That's the one with da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, which
was,
I wouldn't...
It was college. Remember, do you remember they had the college rankings, the charts?
Oh, yeah.
It was top 40, Christian... And I think college. I don't even think they had anything.
College was alt. No, they might have done like R&B.
They might have, but I don't remember. But I remember looking at the charts every week in the back of Rolling Stone, and I think it was just those. I don't know. It wouldn't have been Christian, but it was definitely college and definitely top 40.
It would always be DC Talk.
Yeah,
DC Talk would always be on number one. Sonic Youth, Dirty, which I just had Kim on, and that was great. Blind Melon. I'm trying to see these.
Blind Melon.
The albums that really fucking. Lucinda Williams. I don't know if I would put her with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just going down and going to the top 10.
Yeah, so that's the kind of sound that was coming out, and she was way more deadpan than that. Liz Phair.
Yeah, I'm looking.
It was a different sound, but also similar. Different in that. So I dated some chick once, and she spent time in Spain or something like that, and she was watching an independent movie in America, an American independent movie. And all her friends were like, oh, this is very Hollywood. And she goes, it's actually not. It's an independent movie. It's literally not Hollywood. And they're like, I don't know, man. This seems like a very Hollywood movie. She goes, it's not, though. And then she realized, like, oh, this is independent of Hollywood. Whereas in Spain and Europe, the movies don't even have an ending. You know, they're not even doing that.
Yeah.
So this is like, oh, maybe the bad guy doesn't lose, but like there's still a bad guy and a good guy. Whereas in Europe, they're just like, people are just people. Like they don't even, not the same standard. So like Liz Phair was different than these bands, but also quite the same. You know, you look
very
back
90s.
On it 25, 30 years later, and you're like, it's that sound. It's no different than Julian Hatfield, than Frente, than whatever. It's in that same range.
I just feel like it's probably... there's a reason we're talking about this other than those, and it could be lyrically, yeah, it could be the sound.
I don't know what it is. I don't know, because I wasn't around before, yeah. So I don't know how it changed anything.
If anybody listening knows and has a really great blurb about why this is that big,
yeah,
send it to me, and I will fucking read it next week.
Yeah.
All right, let me see if I have any questions and we'll get you out of here. All right, here, this is a quick one. This is from our Patreon user, Notorious RGA. So Liz lost out a Grammy Award for Best Female Rock Performance to Melissa Etheridge, Come to My Window in 95.
It's a great song.
And then Alanis Morissette, You Ought to Know in 96.
Also a great song.
Was she robbed?
No. What song was she robbed from?
I don't know. I got to look. He didn't put that in the info, dude. He didn't put that in the question.
Like, but she's great.
All right. Who would win in a fight? I'm taking his question.
Come to My Window was a massive, massive song. And You Ought to Know was even bigger. You Ought to Know was like her debut song. Everybody's like, what the fuck is this? This rage from
dude,
a woman?
That was the craziest shit.
No, not robbed. Dude. That's...
guys would listen to the Alanis Morissette song. I remember being in Ryan McLaughlin's car and him putting that on and being like, this shit fucking rips. Yeah, like, it's great.
I saw her at 930 Club when she had that one hit before she had Ironic and totally changed the perception of who she was. And it was like, what the fuck? And I went to 930, one of the first concerts I've been to.
How lucky we were. To have that venue.
Yeah, I perform there now too, which is also like really cool.
I'll be there for the 40th anniversary of the DC Improv, and I've never been more excited.
Oh, so they're doing shows at 9:30?
They're going to do a jam there.
Oh.
So, cuz they even brought me up. They were like, well, "Where would you want to go?" And I go, 9:30 Club, yeah, please, yeah, yeah. Dear God.
Yeah, if it wasn't for DC Improv being so cool and my home Road Club always, I would love to perform there. But I opened for Rogan there and it was great.
Oh, that must have been a fucking trip.
It was great.
Who would win in a fight? Melissa Etheridge, Alanis Morissette, or Liz Phair?
Melissa Etheridge. She's a dyke. That's just, listen, guys. Also, Liz Phair, she has a song 6'1". She is not 6'1". She's actually very petite.
She's very, very tiny. I think she's 5'2".
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions?
Yeah, all those songs are great. I would like to know what she was nominated for. Was it Supernova?
I'd have to look. I think it's Supernova. So 95 and 96. So she got back-to-back nominations. Here's a good one. And then I don't know if we've already covered this, but we can figure it out. What sets Liz Phair apart from other feminist musicians, do you think?
I don't think she's a feminist musician.
Yeah.
I think they're just putting that on her. I think they're just saying, you must be a feminist because you're a woman in a man's world. But I don't think she was doing that at all. Sarah McLachlan, also not a feminist until... she put on Lil Affair, and then she's like, oh, now you definitely are interested in female stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not really your music. It's not really coming out in your music. It's just like the tour you organized.
Yeah.
I don't think Liz Phair is a feminist. I think she's just a musician, and that's fine to be. And no more than like Joe List is a masculist, you know, for doing his kind of comedy. It's just like, if anything, he's a fucking homo. You know, but like Yeah, I think they're just putting that on her. I don't agree with her, and I don't think she would. I saw this interview. I read this interview book with Aung San Suu Kyi, this Myanmar leader. She's under house arrest forever. I think she's back under house arrest now. And they asked her if she's a feminist, and she goes, "We got no time for that." And they're like, "What?" And she goes, "Listen, we're trying to get out from under the thumb of the fucking oppressive army who's leading this regime, disappearing people all the time. Like, women's rights, men's rights." She goes, "That's a luxury I would love to get into a decade or two from now, but we're not there yet. We're trying to survive." And I think Liz Phair is like, "I'm not even talking about that, dude. I'm trying to rethink music."
Yeah.
And not in terms of what's between my legs, you know? So yeah, I just disagree with the question.
All right. No, I agree.
One interesting note.
Go ahead.
She met Mick Jagger.
Yes.
And, she had this album that was a remake of Exile on Guy Bell, and she, somebody said, "Would you like to meet Mick Jagger?" And she goes, "Yes, for sure. I mean, not just because I'm tied to him now forever because of this project I did that ended up being breaking me, but also because he's the lead singer of the Rolling Stones."
Yeah, who wouldn't want to meet him?
It's the only reason I got into in the first place Exile on Guy Bell, because, like, what a cool band.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Oh, you're the one who fucking glommed off me and made a name off my hard work? Well, all right, you're friendly enough, I guess."
Yeah.
And he was like pissed about it. And she was like, "Look, what are you going to do? He's Mick Jagger. He can do whatever he wants."
She goes, and it was sort of like, "We're going to let you," because this is what she says, the quote. He goes, "You're welcome for using our name to get your fame."
Wow.
And then and it was sort of like, "We're going to let you off this one time, you cheeky person. I understood where he was coming from, and I kind of respected him for being that high above me that's all he could give from that atmosphere level." Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's like
you're a young upstart musician. I'm fucking
selling out stadiums, and we're one of the greatest rock bands of all time.
It's like, great, congrats on your success. It's like you're headlining a fucking the DC Improv versus, like, you know, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, dude.
And you're like, "I'm doing it." Like, all right, relax, kid.
Let me see if I have anything pretty interesting. All right, so we already talked about how this skyrocketed. Let's just do the sales real quick. This peaked at number 12 on the U.S. Billboard Hot Heat Seekers chart, and at number 196 on the U.S. Billboard. It has been certified gold in the United States. It was number one album. Here, this is the big ones. It was a number one album of the year in critics polls in Spin and Village Voice.
Number one album in Spin.
Yeah,
so that's pretty big.
That is big.
That's big.
And it was ranked
also big, but Spin was a national thing.
It was ranked number 15 in Spin's 100 greatest albums from between 95 to 2005. VH1 named Exile and Guyville the
95. It wasn't 95. It was before that.
Oh, 85. I'm sorry, 85 to 2005.
Okay.
Named Exile and Guyville the 96th greatest album of all time. This is VH1. And Pitchfork ranked it at number 30 on the 2003 version of the best albums in the 90s. And then just, I guess, before we go into the rapid facts, this is, where's the guy that we like? This guy, Robert Christou. He named it among his 10 best albums from the 90s.
I don't know
that is. Let me see. Ooh, this might be interesting. The sudden success of the album also generated a somewhat negative response from Chicago's indie music scene.
Right.
Fair commented, "It's odd. Guyville was such a part of the indie, but at the same time, it was kind of at war with indie, and I made that record." Another person that arose from that success dealing with that, when it was about the stage fright. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember her back then. I didn't understand stage fright. I get it now. But she was like, "I didn't like all these people looking at me." She said, like, within a short time, if I remember, she goes, "I was a normal person, and then I was a star." And she goes, "Everywhere I went, people were staring at me, and she goes, I did not like it, being looked at all the time." I think she was like, "I went to a restaurant." These are such fucking old memories. She goes, "I went to a restaurant. I was there a week before, and it was, can I help you?" And then it was like all these people looking at me a week later, and it's like I was this person to them as opposed to just someone coming in. And she goes, "I wasn't comfortable with it." And, dude, I get it.
Yeah.
Any level of fame, as small as I have it, I hate it.
Really?
Hate it. Hate being stared at, hate being analyzed as what people think I am rather than just what I am there in the spot. Ugh. It's annoying as shit.
But you know, once you put art out into the world, people are going to, you're going to find haters, you're going to find fans.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you're comfortable with it.
I get it.
Yeah. you know, I saw this thing once that the artist doesn't want you looking at them. They want you looking at the art, you know?
For sure.
Imagine you're staying next to that painting you made of is that Bill Cosby playing trumpet?
Miles Davis. And I can see he's definitely got on the Bill Cosby sweater.
Yeah. And if the artist is standing right there, you're like, oh, you made that? But they don't want that. They want to stand behind you, overhearing you talking about the piece.
Yeah.
But comedy is such a weird one. Music too. Because like, except for like Gorillaz. Because like, yeah, we do know you. We're laughing at you, watching you. So you can't get away from it. You can't put it on canvas and then walk away.
Do you have what's the weirdest or most awkward you've ever felt with your fame?
I don't know. I just hated it all moments.
Okay. All right, here, let's get some rapid and we'll get you out of here, dude. Okay. This ruled, man. Favorite song on the record?
The one, even when I was 17, that one, or I think that's Fucking Run.
Yeah.
Or the one divorce song.
Which surprisingly that you picked this out, because before this record even came into my ecosystem, Spotify does like recommend songs for me, and it recommended this and I saved it.
Wow.
I really liked this one, yeah. But it's not my favorite. My favorite is Fucking Run. I think it's great.
And the big one, the biggest hit she had is what?
Never Ever.
Never Ever.
I like Fucking Run because of the melody. I think it showcases, if you were going to try to give somebody like a song from this record to be like, this is what the rest of the record's
because
like.
Because it's deadpan. And it's sexual. And it's sort of deep lyrically, but also like very dampened, I would say. Vocally and musically. It's dampened.
What I love, it's like we said, it's simple.
Simple.
The title, the chorus rules. Fucking Run is such a great title. And then the lyric, like you said, Even When I Was 12, you're just like, holy shit. Least favorite song on the record?
I don't know.
You don't have one?
No.
I had to go through to figure out which one I disliked. It's one of the...
I've listened to this way more now, recently, but I had it on CD, and CD is a different kind of listen than Spotify. It's closer to Spotify, I'd say, because you just press play on song one as long as you're not like jumping around by accident. That's always the worst. Like, what? God, motherfucker, shuffle.
Yeah. And that happened to me today. I was listening to it, and I forgot that I put it on shuffle. I was like, it doesn't go from this song to this song. Yeah. I'm already four songs in.
Yeah. But on record, it is a four side album. Double record. Same as Exile on Guyville. 55 minutes. So you can't listen to it all the way through. You choose a side. You play that side. If it's one, then you flip it for two. But then you got to go back to the sleeve for three and four. It's a different process. So I don't know what my favorite's not. But I had it on CD, and that was just like you press play and
you
play
let it all go. The way through. I actually chose Strange Loop. I don't think it was it's a closing song on the record. I don't think it should have ended the album. I think there were so many other great songs that she could have ended it with. I was so excited to do this with you because I think I texted it to you, like, this grew on me to where I didn't like it at all. And then I'm like, wow, this is really good. And now, dude, I used to think Lilith Fair, like I said, you lump her in with all the other female artists that I'm not a fan of musically and just wrote her off. And now I'm like, oh, no. Hey, this is.
Yeah. Google something for me.
What do you want?
Did Liz Fair do Lilith Fair? I'd be surprised if she didn't, but not that surprised.
Lilith.
I could also see if she did it in like the year three or something where it's like, oh shit, we left off some bands.
Yep. From the 1998 one, Erykah Badu, Liz Phair.
Later one.
Yeah, Missy Elliott.
Yeah, that was a later one.
Paula Cole.
Yeah.
And this is considered.
That makes sense to me because it's like, no, I'm already, I don't want to tour. I don't want to play. And I've been doing shit on my own. It's not.
See, she's really cute here. Picture that they have pulled up. Like, hold on, let me see if this works. Yeah, this one right here. I mean, I don't know. She just.
Yeah, dude.
She's really cute.
I feel like I saw her live once somehow, but I don't know if that's true.
And she has aged wonderfully.
Yeah.
She's wonderfully.
I mean, honestly, she's probably my age. A couple years younger than me.
Let me look.
I think she probably hit. I was 25. No, I was 25 when I started comedy. So maybe she's a few years older than me.
Liz Phair. God damn it. I never know how to write. Liz Phair. Just go to her age. Let's put up her wiki.
I'm going to guess 51.
Coming in at, she's older than you. 100% has to be older than you.
Has to be, because I mean, I was listening to her at 23. So
54.
54, okay.
She's born in 67. All right, final question, because I feel like we already answered the, I'll still ask you that last one I ask everybody. I just feel like we might have answered it. All right, what song?
Before you ask that, you have it in your head?
The question?
Yeah.
Oh, I got two of them. These are the ones I ask everybody.
I always wonder, like, how much of my musical taste, my movie taste, TV taste, art taste, and of any kind, books, are based on time and place, a sense memory, whatever it's called when you, like, remember the past.
Reminisce?
Reminiscent. Yeah. I don't know if it's reminiscence or if it's, like, that it's really great, and I have no way to separate them anymore.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll watch an old movie you haven't seen in 30 years, and you're like, oh, this sucked. I thought it was great. Star Wars is just a bad movie. Yeah. It is. It's for children. It's for 10-year-olds. It's not the bad storyline, bad acting, really bad acting, bad dialogue. But, of course, I remember it as this amazing film. But you go back, and if you take out that reminiscence, it's like nostalgia is the word.
Nostalgia, yeah.
If you take out the nostalgia, what does it really have? And there's almost no way to separate it. So I wonder sometimes with this shit, I'm like, did I just like this because it
was a time of your life, yeah, and where you were at and everything. Yeah, of course.
And I had a friend who got into NXS recently, and I played. So I'll go back. I'll look for records. It's a fun thing. I just got into records. And if I had it when I was on tape, when I was a kid, that played it ad nauseum, I'd be like, oh, sweet, this one. I'd love to listen to it again on record. What's the U2 live album that I just got? Rattle and Hum. It was like, oh, I have this. It played it nonstop. Cool, yeah. I have it. Great. Someone's like, we have a Japanese import. I'm like, not interested. I just want to play it. Yeah. You know, it's not a collector's item for me. And so I was playing NXS, and somebody heard it and was like, what's this? I'm like, that's NXS. It was like a big band when I was doing it. And they were like, this is amazing. I'm like, is it? Great. Because I thought so, but I can't be sure.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you like Liz Phair.
Oh, I'm telling, but if I would have heard this in 1993, I wouldn't have liked it.
Right.
I had to age into
go away
it.
From it. Exactly.
Yeah. Dude, there's, you know, 1993 is, I'm telling you, it's me. It's Pearl Jam, Nirvana, right. Soundgarden, fucking Stone Temple Pilots. And then Wu-Tang hadn't got into it, but it was like Midnight Marauders, like Tribe Called Quest was, and Public Enemy were the hip hop groups. And if this would have come into my ecosystem, I would have been like, this is terrible.
Right.
I would have written this off. Just before, like I did.
You ever play a song, listen to this song, and within three notes, you're like, you're like, God damn it. You got to give it the chance that I gave it.
Yeah.
And they just won't.
And that's why, but also on the first listen to this, I wasn't on board.
Right.
It took the third, fourth listen, and I think it was on my way back from Poughkeepsie where I was listening to it driving, and it was just me and the dog. It's dark out, and it just created a mood where not only, because I'm zoning out just driving, but now I can actually hear the lyrics and understand it because I'm not just walking around the city trying to make sure I don't get hit by a fucking city bike.
Right. Yeah, you can hear them. Exactly. Driving is different. Yeah, it's a really good album.
It's a great album. Yeah. It's a really great. I'm glad that that this is on the list. All right.
If you like this, everybody listening, I would give Supernova, Whip Smart a real chance. Because if listen to this one a few times and then listen to what she can actually do once you put a guitar in her hand.
I want
to
hear that now. I'm actually curious to see where she goes. All right. What song on this record would you fuck to?
Not fucking Run. I don't know, man. I just, here's the problem. I don't ever know names of songs. So even when I'm like, I'm a big LCD Sound System fan, they go, what about this? I'm like,
you don't know. You know by sound.
Like, are you lying about being a fan? I'm like, no, I really love them. I've listened to the album nonstop. I don't stop and, I just never stop and read the title of a song. War Pigs, I know. Most other ones, I'm like, all the Led Zeppelin songs, I'm like, I don't remember which one Black Dog is. I remember I like Black Dog, but I don't remember which one Black Dog is.
You don't know Black Dog?
No, because it's not in the lyrics. It's named after a fucking dog that walked into their studio.
Hey, mama's in the way you move.
That's why I knew I was associating with something I liked, but I can't. But if you sang that, I'm like, what's the name of this? I'm like, I don't know. Hey, mama. So now I get it. I'll remember this for a little bit. Jesus, dude, relax. But so I don't know what song I'd fuck to. I just listened to the whole album.
I chose Shatter because it creates a very.
Yeah.
It's very. The whole song is very down.
Moody.
I like fucking to. I like fucking to.
It's God also it. It's that it's reminiscent that other song is reminiscent of like grade school piano class, you know, music class in school. Like
this isn't complicated. This
it's
record,
like chopsticks
almost. This
it's
record
like,
it's like
very down.
That's why I'm
very
curious.
Very simple.
I want to hear where she went. I'm actually by the rest of the day. I'm going to listen to Liz Phair and see how the music
just
evolved.
Hop on the first song Whip Smart. Just first 5 seconds and you'll hear immediately the change.
Whip Smart. Booyah. Chopsticks.
Nope. Sorry. Next song. This is also, I think.
Supernova.
Yeah. So now this is like 90s rock. 90s alt rock. Sounds like the Breeders.
I was going to say, it sounds like U2, that wow.
Uh-huh. So this is what she can do. So it's interesting. She started with a very simple chopstick song and then went to this. Anyway, so go ahead. What's your next question?
Last question. I feel like we might have answered this, but
finalmente.
Does this deserve to be on the 500 greatest albums list?
Dude, I don't know. Here's a quote I'll give you.
Yeah, take it.
I think it's Mark Twain. I'm not sure. Comparison is the thief of joy. Anytime you're sitting there going, where does this compare to other things? You're not enjoying what you got. If you're sitting there seeing Iverson drop 44 points, you know, with 19 in the fourth quarter to win by two, you're like, that was amazing. Like, yeah, but I saw Jordan score 65 once. And it was like, so now I can't enjoy this fucking performance.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's a great album. I don't even know what else is on there. It reminds me of an old Norm Macdonald bit where you can see both sides of something, where he's like, where he goes, what about abortion? He goes, woman's right to choose. He goes, yes, it is a woman's right to choose. It's her body, her choice, for sure. He goes, yeah, but it's a human life. He goes, that's right. You can't take a human life away. 100%. You can't do that. Where it's like, I don't know the rest of the albums on the 500 list. I don't know what's 501 to 600. I don't know what it should be on.
Yeah.
So like, oh, it's like, they got mad because Klay Thompson was left off the 50 greatest players list. And I was like, yeah, well, he's great. But is Dominique Wilkins not on there? Isn't Dominique Wilkins better than Klay Thompson? I don't know. I don't know who's the honorable mentions. It's not my jam.
No, dude, no, great answer. Promote away. Anything you want to promote?
Yeah, I mean, I have an album or two on Spotify. If you listen to that, if you're listening on wherever. I have a podcast called Ari Shaffir Skeptic Tank, and go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/AriShaffir. I put stand-up on there, and I'll put some podcasts on there, and whatever else.
Are you leaving anytime soon, or are you going to be staying in America?
Probably take off. After I do my next special, I want to go to Cuba this year with Bobby Kelly.
Oh, God.
And I think I might do a writing seminar in Paris in July.
Fuck, dude.
I had a nice long two new countries a year streak that was broken not this last year, the year before.
Yeah.
Did spend 2 months of that year in Ecuador, but
it's pretty good.
It's also COVID, you know? But I had one, and then this last year I got Dominican Republic and Tahiti right at the end. And this year, probably, I don't know. But I want to go somewhere for like a month or two. I want to go somewhere off-grid.
Yeah,
I
do too.
Leave my phone behind and just like really fucking get free.
Well, I'm glad you were here. You were on grid so I could get you for this. Yeah, thank you, buddy.
You're welcome.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you? The one and only Ari Shaffir. Follow him on all social media at Ari Shaffir. Listen to his podcast, Skeptic Tank, and go to arithegreat.com for all things Ari Shaffir. Little Ari Shaffir. For shout out this week, I want to give a huge shout out to Brian Breslaw. You can find him on Instagram at Brian's OFX, BRIANSOFX. You rule. He's a power chord enthusiast. Fucking fucking Dean, y'all. All right. For new music, oh shit. We have a listener submitted Snail Mail, indie rock band from Ellicott City, Maryland, that lists Liz Phair among their idols. And you're listening to the song Headlock off their 2021 record Valentine from Matador Records. And you can find links on their music for the BB Scootily Doodle at 500podcast.com. And if you want your song played at the end of the podcast, send us your song. We'll play it. Next week, oh shit, we about to get sizzad. Disintegration by The Cure. It's from 1989. Do your homework. We'll be right back.
500. Keeping it fleecy for the Fleece Nation. On the 500.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
Next Chapter Podcasts.